In 2004, Professor Frank Levi from MIT and Professor Richard Murnane from Harvard published a thorough research of the job market, listing those professions most likely to undergo automation. Truck drivers were given as an example of a job that could not possibly be automated in the foreseeable future. It is hard to imagine, they wrote, that algorithms could safely drive trucks on a busy road. A mere 10 years later, Google and Tesla not only imagine this, but are actually making it happen. In fact, as time goes by, it becomes easier and easier to replace humans with computer programs, not merely because the algorithms are getting smarter, but also because humans are professionalizing. Ancient hunter-gatherers mastered a very wide variety of skills in order to survive, which is why it would be immensely difficult to design a robotic hunter-gatherer. Such a robot would have to know how to prepare spare points from flintstones, how to find edible mushrooms in a forest, how to use medicinal herbs to bandage a wound, how to track down a mammoth, and how to coordinate a charge with a dozen other hunters. However, over the last few thousand years, we humans have been specializing. A taxi driver or a cardiologist specializes in a much narrower niche than a hunter-gatherer, which makes it easier to replace them with AI. Even the managers in charge of all these activities can be replaced. Thanks to its powerful algorithms, Uber can manage millions of taxi drivers with only a handful of humans. Most of the commands are given by the algorithms without any need of human supervision. In May 2014, Deep Knowledge Ventures, a Hong Kong venture capital firm specializing in regenerative medicine, broke new ground by appointing an algorithm called Vital to its board. Vital makes investment recommendations by analyzing huge amounts of data on the financial situation, clinical trials, and intellectual property of prospective companies. Like the other five board members, the algorithm gets to vote on whether the firm makes an investment in a specific company or not. Examining Vital's record so far, it seemed that it has already picked up one managerial vice, nepotism. It has recommended investing in companies that grant algorithms more authority. With Vital's blessing, Deep Knowledge Ventures has recently invested in Silico Medicine, which develops computer-assisted methods for drug research, and in Pathway Pharmaceuticals, which employs a platform called OncoFinder to select and rate personalized cancer therapies. As algorithms push humans out of the job market, wealth might become concentrated in the hands of the tiny elite that owns the all-powerful algorithms, creating unprecedented social inequality. Alternatively, the algorithms might not only manage businesses, but actually come to own them. At present, human law already recognizes intersubjective entities like corporations and nations as legal persons. Though Toyota or Argentina has neither a body nor a mind, they are subject to international laws. They can own land and money. They can sue and can be sued in court. We might soon grant similar status to algorithms. An algorithm could then own a venture capital fund without having to obey the wishes of any human master. If the algorithm makes the right decisions, it could accumulate a fortune, which it could then invest as it sees fit, perhaps buying your house and becoming your landlord. If you infringe on the algorithm's legal rights, say by not paying rent, the algorithm could hire lawyers and sue you in court. If such algorithms consistently outperform human fund managers, we might end up with an algorithmic upper class owning most of our planet. This may sound impossible, but before dismissing the idea, remember that most of our planet is already legally owned by non-human intersubjective entities, namely nations and corporations. Indeed, 5,000 years ago, much of Sumer was owned by imaginary gods such as Enki and Inanna. If gods can possess land and employ people, why not algorithms? So what will people do? Art is often said to provide us with our ultimate and uniquely human sanctuary. In a world where computers replace doctors, drivers, teachers, and even landlords, everyone would become an artist. Yet, it is hard to see why artistic creation will be safe from the algorithms. Why are we so sure computers will be unable to better us in the composition of music? According to the life sciences, art is not the product of some enchanted spirit or metaphysical soul, but rather of organic algorithms recognizing mathematical patterns. If so, there is no reason why non-organic algorithms could not master it. David Cope is a musicology professor at the University of California in Santa Cruz. He He's also one of the more controversial figures in the world of classical music. Cope has written programs that compose concertos, chorales, symphonies, and operas. His first creation was named EMI, Experiments in Music Intelligence, which specialized in imitating the style of Johann Sebastian Bach. It took 7 years to create the program, but once the work was done, EMI composed 5,000 chorales a la Bach in a single day. Cope arranged a performance of a few select chorales in a music festival at Santa Cruz. Enthusiastic members of the audience praised the wonderful performance and explained excitedly how the music touched their innermost being. They did not know it was composed by EMI rather than Bach, and when the truth was revealed, some reacted with glum silence, while others shouted in anger. EMI continued to improve and learned to imitate Beethoven, Chopin, Rachmaninoff, and Stravinsky. Cope got EMI a contract, and its first album, Classical Music Composed by Computer, sold surprisingly well. Publicity brought increasing hostility from classical music buffs. Professor Steve Larson from the University of Oregon sent Cope a challenge for a musical showdown. Larson suggested the professional pianist play three pieces, one after the other, one by Bach, one by EMI, and one by Larson himself. The audience would then be asked to vote who composed which piece. Larson was convinced people would easily tell the difference between soulful human compositions and the lifeless artifact of a machine. Cope accepted the challenge. On the appointed date, hundreds of lecturers, students, and music fans assembled in the University of Oregon's concert hall. At the end of the performance, a vote was taken. The result? The audience thought that EMI's piece was genuine Bach, that Bach's piece was composed by Larson, and that Larson's piece was produced by a computer. Critics continue to argue that EMI's music is technically excellent, but that it lacks something. It is too accurate. It has no depth. It has no soul. Yet when people heard EMI's compositions without being informed of their provenance, they frequently praised them precisely for their soulfulness and emotional resonance. Following EMI's successes, Cope created newer and even more sophisticated programs. His crowning achievement was Annie. Whereas EMI composed music according to predetermined rules, Annie is based on machine learning. Its musical style constantly changes and develops in reaction to new inputs from the outside world. Cope has no idea what Annie is going to compose next. Indeed, Annie does not restrict itself to music composition, but also explores other art forms such as haiku poetry. In 2011, Cope published Comes the Fiery Night, 2000 Haiku by Man and Machine. Of the 2000 haikus in the book, some are written by Annie and the rest by organic poets. The book does not disclose which are which. If you think you can tell the difference between human creativity and machine output, you are welcome to test your claim. In the 19th century, the Industrial Revolution created a huge new class of urban proletariats, and socialism spread because no one else managed to answer their unprecedented needs, hopes, and fears. Liberalism eventually defeated socialism only by adapting the best parts of the socialist program. In the 21st century, we might witness the creation of a new massive class, people devoid of any economic, political, or even artistic value, who contribute nothing to the prosperity, power, and glory of society. In September 2013, two Oxford researchers, Carl Benedict Frey and Michael Osborne, published The Future of Employment, in which they surveyed the likelihood of different professions being taken over by computer algorithms within the next 20 years. The algorithm developed by Frey and Osborne to do the calculations estimated that 47% of US jobs are at a high risk. For example, there is a 99% probability that by 2033, humans telemarketers and insurance underwriters will lose their jobs to algorithms. There is a 98% probability that the same will happen to sports referees, 97% that it will happen to cashiers, and 96% to chefs. Waiters, 94%, paralegal assistants, 94%, tour guides, 91%, bakers, 89%, bus drivers, 89%, construction laborers, 88%, veterinary assistants, 86%, security guards, 84%, sailors, 83%, bartenders, 77%, archivists, 76%, carpenters, 72%, lifeguards, 67%, and so forth. There are, of course, some safe jobs. The likelihood that computer algorithms will displace archaeologists by 2033 is only 0.7%, because their job requires highly sophisticated types of pattern recognition and does not produce huge profits. Hence, it is improbable that corporations or government will make the necessary investment to automate archaeology within the next 20 years. Of course, by 2033, many new professions are likely to appear, for example, virtual world designers. But such professions will probably require much more creativity and flexibility than your run-of-the-mill job, and it is unclear whether 40-year-old cashiers or insurance agents will be able to reinvent themselves as virtual world designers. Just try to imagine a virtual world created by an insurance agent. And even if they do so, the pace of progress is such that within another decade, they might have to reinvent themselves yet again. After all, algorithms might well outperform humans in designing virtual worlds too. The crucial problem is not creating new jobs. The crucial problem is creating new jobs that humans perform better than algorithms. The technological bonanza will probably make it feasible to feed and support the useless masses even without any effort on their side. But what will keep them occupied and content? People must do something or they will go crazy. What will they do all day? One solution might be offered by drugs and computer games. Unnecessary people might spend increasing amounts of time within 3D virtual reality worlds, which would provide them with far more excitement and emotional engagement than the drab reality outside. Yet such a development would deal a mortal blow to the liberal belief in the sacredness of human life and of human experiences. What's so sacred in useless bums who pass their days devouring artificial experiences in La La Land? Some experts and thinkers such as Nick Bostrom warn that humankind is unlikely to suffer this degradation because once artificial intelligence surpasses human intelligence, it might simply exterminate humankind. The AI is likely to do so either for fear that humankind would turn against it and try to pull its plug, or in pursuit of some unfathomable goal of its own. For it would be extremely difficult for humans to control the motivation of a system smarter than themselves. Even pre-programming the system with seemingly benign goals might backfire horribly. One popular scenario imagines a corporation designing the first artificial superintelligence and giving it an innocent test, such as calculating pi. Before anyone realizes what is happening, the AI takes over the planet, eliminates the human race, launches a conquest campaign to the ends of the galaxy, and transforms the entire known universe into a giant supercomputer that for billions upon billions of years calculates pi ever more accurately. After all, this is the divine mission its creator gave it.